Okay, the next argued case this morning is number 20-1790, HTC Corporation against Invent SBE, LLC. Mr. Franklin.
May it please the court, to succeed on this appeal, appellants need to show that the Patent Trial and Appeal Board erred in finding no motivation to combine the Lee, VJM, and Hashin references. There is no dispute that these three references disclose each and every element of claims 1 through 8 of the 439 patent. The only issue is the motivation to combine.
We review under a substantial evidence standard, right?
That's correct. And appellants presented substantial evidence of a motivation to combine in the form of a reduced signaling overhead when the references are combined. And this evidence came from the references themselves, from our expert's testimony, and from the background section of the 439 patent, which talked about how the subcarriers of the prior art were combined into subbands with a single modulation encoding parameter applied to each of the subbands, and how that saved on signaling overhead.
Can you just clarify something for me? And I probably should understand this. First of all, signaling overhead is or is not different from feedback overhead. And in any event, can you explain in concrete terms that I might understand, in really concrete terms, what that those phrases refer to?
Sure. Overhead and feedback relate to the direction by which the travels. And I forget which one relates to which direction, but one relates to the uplink to the base station.
Oh, that's all that is. Okay.
And the other relates to the downlink to the handset.
Okay, and then overhead is just the number of words or bits one needs to use to tell people where to look for things?
That's right. It's not the actual data that the person is viewing on their cell phone. It's the data that tells you how the subbands are created and what modulation and coding is being applied to those subbands.
Okay.
So in the admitted prior art, where the subcarriers were combined into subbands and a single modulation coding scheme was applied to each of those subbands, it was recognized in the admitted prior art that that would save on signaling overhead because you have fewer parameters that need to be conveyed between the user equipment and the base station. All the 439 patent is further bundle those bundles of subcarriers into a subband group and then do the same thing, which is apply a single modulation encoding scheme over all of those subcarriers. Our reference, Lee, the primary reference.
Is there evidence that there is a trade-off between saving on overhead and so-called packing efficiency, or those do work in opposite directions in some sense?
That's right. And that trade-off is mentioned in VJAN. And that was the trade-off that the Patent Trial and Appeal Board relied upon.
And what's the intuitive, concrete explanation? If you need less overhead, why does that reduce
packing efficiency?
The amount of each packet that can consist of data, which I gather is what was meant. Is that right?
That's right. So as you combine all these subcarriers into a big subband group, there's the possibility that you'll end up with more wasted space. Think about packing suitcases for a trip. If you use smaller suitcases, you're going to be more efficient in your packing because you'll have less wasted space. If you use bigger suitcases, you're more likely to have wasted space in your suitcase. And so that's what packing efficiency relates to at a very high level. Where the board went wrong was in relying upon the trade-off with packing efficiency to negate the motivation to combine in order to achieve a reduction in signaling overhead. And that error was both a legal error and a factual error. The legal error was in failing to recognize that when a reference discloses both advantages and disadvantages of approach, that those disadvantages don't necessarily negate the motivation to combine. And that law is discussed in the Medicam versus Rolabo case and in the Erickson versus TCL case, which are cited in our briefs.
I agree with you. It doesn't necessarily negate it, but at the same time, wouldn't a complete 103 analysis require taking into account both the advantages and the disadvantages?
Well,
and then have some kind of rationale, some kind of explanation why you would want to, it would be okay, a skilled artisan would nevertheless be motivated by the advantages and would be willing to absorb the disadvantages in the context of making the modification.
I have two responses to that. The first one is that the case law doesn't require us to address the disadvantages because whenever you take a course of action, there's going to be some disadvantages associated with that. It was enough for us to show that the prior art shows the advantage of applying a single modulation encoding scheme over a group of subbands and that this would achieve signaling overhead. But here we get to the factual error in the board's decision, which is the combination of the primary reference Lee and the secondary reference VJM.
I guess I'm a little lost there where you're saying that there's no requirement to take into account the disadvantages. I mean, what if the prior art reference said you really can improve your signaling overhead, but with the trade-off of producing a lot of cancer-inducing radiation? I mean, I would think you would... Anybody trying to rely on that teaching to combine it with another reference would have to take into account that a skilled artisan would understand that the reference is teaching you that if you go ahead and add this feature to anything, it's going to also include cancer-inducing radiation.
Yes, and if VJM, the second reference, had said something like that, then you may have a good point there. But all VJM was saying is that there's a recognized trade-off, a known trade-off when you use subband groups. You get the benefit of signaling overhead, but a person of ordinary skill in the art would also have to take into account the loss, the reduction in packing efficiency, and that's just something that a person of ordinary skill in the art would know how to do, just like there's always going to be some disadvantages when you take a certain course of action. But here we
happen to have the disadvantage articulated, and so therefore it's staring at the fact finder in the face. I don't understand why you're saying that it's so easy to just dismiss and almost pretend it's not there, because any course of action necessarily always has some kind of trade-off with it.
Well, it's a known trade-off, which means a person of ordinary skill in the art would know to take that into account when doing a combination. And if you have a combination for which signaling overhead is a priority, as it is in Lee, which specifically has a concern with saving on signaling overhead, then you are going to be motivated to make that combination. If packing efficiency is more important, then that might be a disadvantage. But Lee specifically talks about, and Lee's the primary reference, signaling overhead and saving on that as a priority. The factual problem with the board's analysis is that the combination we propose between Lee and VJN actually doesn't affect the packing efficiency. And that's because packing efficiency concerns how the subband groups are put together, how many subbands are in it. And all of this is set in the primary reference Lee. Lee teaches the subband groups, for example, in figure 6 of Lee. So by the time we get done with the primary reference Lee, the subband groups are already set, and thus the packing efficiency is already set. All appellants relied upon VJN for was the notion that once you've already got the subband group set in Lee, and thus the packing efficiency, you can achieve some overhead signaling savings by applying joint modulation encoding parameters over all of the subbands in that subband group.
Can I return to what I asked you before? One of the problems with this case, and this case is not even close to unique, is that people keep using phrases that do not carry immediate concrete images of what's going on. tell me more concretely than suitcases what's going on with packing efficiency. Because until I understand that, I'm just hearing words floating around, and I'm not getting an image of whether you're substantively onto something or not about saying, oh, there is no more problem of this sort, which I haven't explained yet, in moving from subbands to subband groups. Concretely, what is going on with packing efficiency?
So with packing efficiency, you're taking different subbands on the frequency spectrum and combining them into subband groups. So to go to the suitcase analogy, you can have small suitcases and put your clothes in those small suitcases, and you can make better use of the space potentially, because you may have less wasted space within a suitcase, or you can use bigger suitcases, which may take less information to describe because you've got fewer suitcases, but because the suitcases are bigger, you may have more wasted space in the suitcases. Is that concrete enough for you, or
no, but no? That's okay.
All right, well, it sounds like this is an important point, so let me see if I can maybe do a better job of this.
How about doing it without the analogy?
Okay, without the analogy. On the frequency spectrum, you can put together, you know, the various subbands. And if you take a look at, for example, at figure 9 of VJN, you can see how they put together different subband groups, which they call PLCs. If you make the PLCs big...
That's a physical layer carrier?
That's right, a physical layer channel.
Channel, sorry.
If you make those PLCs big, you're more likely to have wasted space. So like shapes that you've got to put together in like a puzzle form. And if the shapes are big, you're more likely to have wasted space between the shapes. If you make them smaller, more granular, you've got less wasted space between the shapes. But you have to have more overhead signaling to convey between the handset and the base station about how those shapes are set up and what modulation and coding parameters go along with them. So that has to do with the packing efficiency, but Lee, the primary reference, has already specified that you're going to have subband groups. It's already put the various subbands together into the subband groups. Now, so whatever loss
of pack... Lee doesn't have subband groups. Right?
Lee does have subband groups. And if you look at figure six...
I thought you're relying on Vijayan for the disclosure of subband groups, and you're modifying Lee to have subband groups in light of Vijayan. Am I misunderstanding it?
That is a misunderstanding. Lee teaches subband groups, and if you look at figure six of Lee, you'll see the subband groups. Lee takes every fourth subband along the frequency axis and makes that into a subband group. We're relying upon VJN not for the disclosure of a subband group, but for the disclosure that once you have a subband group, you can apply a single modulation and coding scheme over the entire subband group. And that's what we're relying upon the VJN for. That makes sense.
So it's what you do with the subband groups that you rely on VJN to add to subband groups that were present in Lee but not used this way.
That's right. So in Lee, each subband within the subband group still gets its own modulation and coding scheme. In VJN teaches you can apply the same modulating coding scheme over all of the subbands in the subband group. And that's all we're relying upon VJN for. Lee has already created the various subband groups, decided which subbands go into it and how they're going to be configured. VJN says once you've done that, just apply a single modulation and coding scheme over that, and you can save on signaling overhead. The only other reference that we need to bring in is Hashem, because once you combine Lee and VJN, the question is where are those parameters decided? Are they decided at the handset, or are they decided at the base station? And even putting Hashem aside, under KSR versus Teleflex, we know that when there's a finite number of known and predictable solutions to a problem, here there's only two. Either the parameters are decided at the handset or they're decided at the base station. It's obvious to choose one or both of those choices. And we could have stopped there, but we brought in Hashem, which makes clear that not only would a person of ordinary skill in the art known to have done the parameter selection at the handset, but that there was a reason to do so. Because Hashem says when you make the parameter decision at the handset, you can further save on signaling overhead. And it was error for the board, first not to recognize that there was only two choices that could have been done here, and then not to look at Hashem and see that Hashem explicitly states the motivation to do it that way. And I see that I'm done with my argument. Before I turn this over, does the board, does the Federal Circuit have any additional questions?
Okay, let's hear from the other side, and we'll save you rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honors. Your Honors, Panasonic invented adaptive modulation encoding, or AMC, on a subband group basis based on channel estimations made per subband and made on the phone. And the 439 patent did say that AMC based on a subcarrier by subcarrier basis and based on a subband basis was known, but not on a subband group basis based on channel estimations per subband. And that's what the patent office granted a patent for. And substantial evidence certainly supports the board's finding that HTC failed to meet its burden to cobble together three different and very disparate references to manufacture the claim elements at issue. Just to step through the references to make sure we know what we're talking about.
Well, just explain. There's a picture formed by the other side that it's kind of no big deal. It's pretty obvious. You can do something at the most granular level. You can do it at the next grouping level. You could do it at the next grouping level. That's all you've done is done the third grouping level. And, you know, there are trade-offs in things with names here called packing efficiency and overhead. So, you know, obvious to at least try each of these choices.
So I think what was missing.
I assume it's more complicated than that, but that's kind of the picture they're presenting.
Yes, Your Honor. I was going to say, I think we're missing technologically what's actually going on here. I think it relates to this idea of the channel estimation. So each subcarrier may have different channel conditions, poor quality, higher quality. And each subband is a bunch of subcarriers that may have different conditions. And then the different subbands themselves spaced out over the entire bandwidth may have different conditions. And so this packing efficiency trade-off thing is if you measure each subcarrier and its conditions and give the modulation encoding parameters that are perfect for that subcarrier, well, then you're going to do a good job on packing efficiency because you're going to get exactly what that subcarrier needs. But you're going to have to report all that information on a subcarrier by subcarrier basis, and you're going to have a lot more overhead signaling. So that's the trade-off.
Overhead signaling is the stuff you're reporting.
Yes. It's the stuff that's not the data that you're going to send. It's this signaling of you know, here is what I need or here is what I want. And so the Lee reference looks at this and says, well, we're going to do this on a subband level basis. So for multiple subcarriers, we're going to report one modulation encoding parameter. And that's what the 439 patent already said was known, was subband-based adaptive modulation encoding. Vagian is a completely, I think that's the third different pronunciation of Vagian, but that's how I've been saying it. It's the completely different. So Vagian is entirely on the base station. The whole reference is just about base station allocation for the downlink channel to the phones, where Vagian, of course, knows everything, knows all conditions, knows all the phones in its area. And there it doesn't always do that. If you look at the best picture, if you want a picture, look at figure 7A of Vagian. It'll show you the PLCs. One of them, it just does one subband and does modulation coding parameters for that. The next one, it chooses to put three together. And the next one, it chooses to just do two. Because it can look at that and say, for contiguous subbands that are next to each other, I, the base station, can decide, well, these are close enough. I can do one set of modulation encoding parameters for these two subbands together or these three subbands together.
Thereby creating a subband group in that instance?
Yes, and we haven't argued that Vagine doesn't have a subband group for the downlink. They are contiguous, you know, next to each other subbands that Vagine sort of puts together on the fly based on the conditions that that it sees.
Why is contiguity of the subbands relevant to the amount of overhead?
Well, if you dig into the 103 analysis and what HTC would have to show here, their proposal is to take this notion of one modulation coding parameter for contiguous subbands in Vagine and just plug it into Li. What Li has is different modulation coding parameters for each subband. Separately, Li suggests, you know, another thing we could do is have, they call them clusters, but it's the same thing as a subband, for a given wireless device, for a given phone, let's assign it subbands spaced out over the entire bandwidth. One here, one here, one here, one way over here. If we have those spaced out, then at least one or two of them should see good channel conditions. And that way, that phone will get decent throughput. Because at least some of the conditions will be good. We are still going to do different modulation encoding parameters for each subband spaced out because they could have wildly, radically different channel conditions and need to have completely different modulation encoding parameters for each one of those. The proposal from HTC was to say, well, just take where Vagine has figured out for the downlink that two subbands next to each other could get the same parameters. Just apply that in Li to its four subbands spaced out over the spectrum. Even though Li doesn't say to do that, Li says do each one separately because they could be totally different. Just apply that down to Li. And this is where the trade-off comes in. And this is what the board found, that there wasn't a sufficient articulated rationale or reasoning to do that. Why would what Vagine figured out to do for a neighboring subband apply to Li's cluster groups that are spaced out? Why would you make that trade-off where you know if you apply one set of modulation encoding parameters to each of these spaced out clusters, you're going to have some that are not going to work? And Dr. Vojcic, you know, getting back to our substantial evidence standard, he goes through this in some detail, what the problem is, where if you use one set of modulation encoding parameters, if you use the minimum for the worst, you know, whatever cluster has the worst channel quality, if you use that minimum one, well, they're all going to work, but you're going to lose out on other clusters that have higher quality. You're not going to get as much throughput. You're not going to get as much data through on those clusters.
Empty space in the larger suitcase.
Yes, you could have. It's a little bit of a, I wouldn't go with that analogy, Your Honor, but yes, you're going to miss out on what you could do. And if you use the highest, as Dr. Vojcic explained, use the best cluster and that modulation encoding parameter set, you have good throughput, but for lower quality clusters, they're not even going to be able to decode it. So it's not going to work.
What about the average,
Your Honor. The average comes in. This is something that really came up in reply. HTC had Dr. Ding put in over 100-page reply declaration that goes into this and says, well, let's do the average. If you do the average, you're just going to have some set of the same problems. It's still going to be the modulation encoding parameters are going to be too high for some clusters or subbands and too low for others. And the board looked right at this issue, again, getting back to substantial evidence, and said there's not a good enough reason to say why would you use the average? The 439 patent, and the Li reference, I mean, they talk about using the minimum, or there's the maximum, or the average. Why would you do that? Why would you make that trade-off? Where, again, I'm not even sure, but perhaps in Vagine, with its subbands next to each other, maybe it's saying, well, these are pretty close, and if I use the average, that'll be good enough, and so I'll group these two, what it calls PLCs, for the downlink down to the phone. But why would you do that again in Li, where Li's clustered groups are subbands spaced out over the bandwidth. And so why would a person with ordinary skill in the art think, oh, I'll just slap the average on there and that'll be great? It may or may not be great based on the different conditions. And so the board required a better reasoning for why you would do that for that particular combination of vagine and leaf. And I think, you know, the other point to make on that, just again for appellate purposes, if you look at the board's decision, it's very clear. I mean, they go through Dr. Wojcic, they go through Dr. Ding, they conclude, for instance, at Appendix 48, that Dr. Ding's testimony on that exact issue I was just discussing was conclusory, and they accord it minimal weight. They separately look at Dr. Wojcic and say that he provides credible explanation. And so that would be a basis right there for
I heard your opposing counsel this morning say that Lee teaches subband groups already. And by the way, whatever the teaching that you borrow from Vijayan to Lee, it's not going to hurt packing efficiency at all.
Yeah, I think that's just technological nonsense, Your Honor.
What did the board say about that?
So Lee, of course, doesn't do adaptive modulation encoding per subband group. They would rely on that. It does it per subband. Different modulation encoding parameters for each subband. The idea, which I've been, I know it's technologically difficult to picture this, but if you look at Lee's figure 6 again, what it suggests is putting different clusters together that are spaced out over the bandwidth. Not for doing adaptive modulation encoding, not for providing one set of parameters, but instead to achieve frequency diversity for a given cell phone, so that that cell phone will get a piece of the bandwidth over here, over here, over here, over here, so that for that cell phone, it will get at least some clusters that are good. And this will maximize overall throughput. I mean, this is kind of the balance that Lee strikes. Vagian, their proposal of HTC, just apply an average modulation encoding parameters, use average SI and R across all of those. That is for sure going to result in less packing efficiency. Because for Lee, say this cluster, say cluster number one, is a fairly low channel quality. It then gets, you know, the modulation encoding parameters appropriate for that cluster. Cluster number two, spaced, you know, far apart on the spectrum, very high channel quality. And that gets much higher modulation encoding parameters. So that will get the most data through there, the most suitcases or full suitcases, if we're going with that, in the higher quality one. If you go and just take the average, now this high quality channel over here, high quality cluster, is going to do less than it could. You're going to get less through. There's where you're sacrificing your packing efficiency. And use the average over on the low quality cluster, it might still work. If it's low enough, it won't be able to decode it and it won't work at all. And this is what Dr. Wojcic went through. That's the trade-off. And this is the trade-off, you know, that was mentioned all the way back in the petition. It's very clear. They went through talking about this trade-off, said it would work, but when you dig into the details, Vagian and Lee are so different from one another that it doesn't work. And the board said you'd need a much much better reasoning for why a person of ordinary skill in the art would make that trade-off. I will mention Hashem, because, of course, this is a three-reference combination. I'll take quick issue with my colleagues saying that there's no dispute about whether all the elements are in the art. As we put, as our statement of issues number one, element 1B is not in the art. Element 1B is the parameter deciding section where you decide modulation encoding parameters for a subband group based on channel estimation per subband.
I took their point to be not that each element in the sense of the paragraphing is in the prior art, but that every little specific thing that you need to find, you can find so as to put together everything that would be found in 1B, if that's...
Sure. Sure, but the issue is that element says decide modulation encoding parameters for a subband group based on channel estimation per subband. Now, Lee, of course, does not decide modulation encoding parameters for a subband group. Vajayan does, but it never mentions channel estimation. So it doesn't say I'm making this decision based on channel estimation per subband. Hashem is then a completely different type of reference. In Hashem, you measure every single subcarrier, figure out which ones are acceptable or unacceptable as far as whether they are above a threshold of, say, quality. They're above, so then Hashem takes basically the good subcarriers, gets rid of the bad ones, says, just take the good ones, and now we can do this thing called link mode where they just pick modulation encoding parameters for the good subcarriers. And Hashem says, yes, you could do that at the base station or do that at the phone. But that is, again, a completely different system, a different situation. The board said, you need a good reason to say why you would do that to move the kind of on-the-fly, contiguous subband group modulation encoding of Vajayan and move that into Lee and into its frequency-diverse cluster groups. It's not so simple as all that because these are, again, three very different references. And so that's, of course, to win on a, you know, if either of those fails, either of those links in the chain of combining the three references fails, the decision should be affirmed. And I do think that should be the result here. And I think I can wrap it up unless the panel has any other specific questions.
One question. Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Franklin.
Thank you, Your Honor. The trade-off that my esteemed colleague was talking about, whereby if you use subband groups and having to use less than ideal parameters if you use a joint modulation coding scheme, that is a different trade-off than the packing efficiency, which is what the board based its decision on. Packing efficiency relates to how you put the subband groups together. So as we discussed, and here's figure 6 from Lee. Lee talks about creating subband groups by taking every fourth subband along the frequency spectrum and creating a subband group out of it. So subband groups are certainly taught in Lee. See figure 6. Here's Vijayan. In VJN, depending on the size of the subband group and how it's configured, you could have losses in packing efficiency because you may not need a PLC that's this big. Or by creating PLCs in this shape, you may have some wasted space. But none of this is implicated by the combination of VJN and Lee because the subband groups are already created in Lee, which is our primary reference. All we're relying upon VJN for is the idea that once you've created the subband groups, you can use a single modulation encoding scheme over that entire group. So that was an error in the board's decision. The trade-off that my esteemed colleague is talking about has to do with when you use a joint modulation encoding scheme over an entire subband group, some of the subcarriers in that subband group will get less than ideal parameters. But our expert addressed that in length in his expert declaration. You can look at paragraphs 177 to 186 of his declaration, which starts at around page 1921 of the joint appendix. Almost all of this evidence was not considered by the board in its final written decision. And this evidence pertains
cited, but you think not considered, is that right?
It's at one point the board, in a string cite, cites all of the paragraphs, but there's no substantive discussion of the fact that the Lee reference teaches using an average, that the Hashem reference teaches using an average, that the prior art YMAX standard used an average, our expert's discussion of an LTE textbook that talks about error coding and interleaving, and just the notion that it doesn't make sense to do what their expert has suggested, which is to choose either the highest signal-to-noise ratio or the lowest signal-to-noise ratio to choose the modulation encoding parameters. Now, what makes sense is to use the average. When you use the highest ratio, most of the subcarriers won't work because you're trying to send the information through too fast. If you use the lowest ratio, then you kill the throughput because you're doing everything too slow. It makes sense to do the average so that you can have decent throughput while still having enough subcarriers being able to send the data through. And that's how it makes sense to do. And our expert went on for length about why it would make sense to do the average and why a person of ordinary skill in the art would have known to have used the average, with explicit examples both from the cited reference and from the WiMAX standard that this was done, and it wasn't considered by the board. On top of all this, the 439 patent itself talks about four existing methods for setting joint modulation encoding parameters when you have multiple subbands. And of these four methods, two involve using an average. So again, we get back to the precept from KSR versus Teleflex, where you have a finite number of known and predictable solutions to a problem, known and predictable design choices. It's obvious to try them, to use them. And so we've got plenty of evidence in the record that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have combined VGN with Lee using an average signal-to-noise ratio. And then finally, in the 30 seconds I've got left on the Hashem reference, we're only using Hashem to show that between the user equipment and the base station, which there's no dispute, those are the only two places that the joint parameters can be decided, that a person of ordinary skill
actually agreed that those are the only two places? That's not self-evident to me. For example, neighboring handsets.
I guess it's theoretically possibly
good. But was it actually agreed or just not disputed here?
There hasn't been any dispute or any suggestion that it would be done elsewhere.
Okay.
But in any event, and I see that my time is up, Hashem teaches do it at the handset and gives a reason for doing so, which is we'll save signaling overhead. Are there any further questions from the court?
Okay. Well, thank you. The case is taken under submission. Thanks to both counsel.